This is Andre Jones, and I'm doing my interview for Ralph Bailey's U.S. history class. I'm interviewing a man, James Jones, who fought in the Vietnam War.
What did you think of the Vietnam War?
Andre, I volunteer for the Army. I was willing to go fight for my country. I felt like it was right. But after getting there, seeing the situation, I didn't think a lot of it. We, as the United States of America, we had to fight under the Geneva Convention, which was the rules and regulations of war. But the Vietnamese and all the other countries were not under the Geneva Convention, which means they could do whatever they wanted to when they wanted to. The United States, they had to be cleared to fight. You had to have orders to fire at any time. You couldn't just fire the first shot. You know, when it first began, any action first began before you could start shooting, you had to be cleared. You know, we're at a big disadvantage. That's why we had so many people. We lost a lot of people over there. A lot more than you ever know, and a lot more than was being reported back here in the United States. So, I really, as the war went on, I was bitter at first, especially after the way we were being treated as we got back. And at the time, they did not declare the war. They declared it a Vietnam conflict. It was not declared a Vietnam War until 1975. So I was pretty bitter about it. Pretty bitter about the war.
Did you have to go right out of high school?
Okay, with me volunteering for the Army, It was right out. It was shortly out of high school. I went in October. I got out of high school in like June, and I stayed home. It was my choice to stay home and work to earn a little money to take with me. And I went in October. So it wasn't like I headed to. They were drafting then, and I volunteered to keep being drafted.
How much training did you have before you were sent into combat?
Okay, before you go to Vietnam, period, you have about 2 weeks of POR, which is preparation for overseas replacement. And that's in a jungle-type setting. And supposedly, that's the only training you have to be prepared for Vietnam. Once you're there, the training is on the job.
Could you tell me some of the things you had to do in training?
In training?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, a while ago. In training, they had a lot of supposedly actual events that you would be dealing with, such as if you're being captured. What you're supposed to do, how you're supposed to react, how you're supposed to resist. We actually trained for if we were being overrun, actual hand-to-hand combat out in the jungle. We were actually out in the jungle. They had a jungle-type setting. And they basically tried to prepare you for about any situation. A snake bite. They taught you all the different types of foods, especially that if you got stranded or got separated from your unit that you could eat to survive. It's pretty intense training.
Did you ever go into a Vietnamese town?
Yeah, we managed to get in there off and on pretty regularly. But the area where I was, we had several villages. I wasn't actually out in the field fighting. I was in the supply unit. And so I saw it rough, but I wasn't no way close to the roughness that the guys that actually out in the field had to have. Far the villages, we'd get into the villages, slip off. You know, we didn't have free access. We slipped off to the villages. And we, several times we was at the village when we was getting hit back in our unit. You know, we had to leave the village and head back to the unit. And, the villages, they, when you went to the villages, you had a pretty much, a lot of American goods there because of the black market. And so you like down there, you buy, like on post, you buy a carton of cigarettes for $1.50. When you went to the village, if you wanted an American cigarette, it paid $1 a pack. And that was back in 1969 when cigarettes were like 35 cents back in the United States. You can get about anything in the village that you want. Because there was so much black market going on that, you know, they had as much of our stuff, weapons. They had our weapons, everything. That's why we're fighting against ourselves. Well, to sell them, buy our goods, that's what we do. You know, weapons. It didn't matter, weapons, food, cigarettes, beer, whatever. They had it.
How long was you in Vietnam?
I was in Vietnam for about 15 and a half months. I had a tour of a year. After I was there 10 months, I extended for another 6 months to be able to come home for 30 days. So to extend 6 months, they send you back home for 30 days, give you 30 days leave with pay and transportation all the way. So I spent 10 months, came home, went over, and spent about 5.5 months. Now I'm going to have to stay another 3.5 months, but I got out on an honor brief to come.
Did being in the war change your life?
War will change anybody's life. Regardless of who you are, it will change your life forever. When I got back to the world from Vietnam, that's what we call back home, the world. It was so uncivilized over there. But, I didn't pay attention to it at first. When I first went into the Army, when I first went to Vietnam, I didn't drink, I didn't do drugs. When I left Vietnam, I still didn't do drugs, but I drank. And I became an alcoholic. But before I got to the stage of alcoholism, I had so many of my friends and people to tell me I had changed, I was different. I couldn't see it and didn't realize it. But it changed me, you know, it changed me. And it practically destroyed my life, you know. I've only gotten it back together in the last 6.5 years. By you being my nephew, you know the changes I went through with alcoholism. But and it began in Vietnam because I did not drink until I was in Vietnam. And that was a whole lot too. You stay depressed all that long. You had to have something where a lot of those guys did drugs and alcohol. I only drank. It only made my situation worse. It makes anybody worse than what it really is. But thank God that I've got my life back together. And I can maybe be an uncle for you guys. A decent uncle. You don't have to see me in the shape you've seen me in so many times. And that makes me feel good.
That's all.
For that question,
did the Vietnamese women really strap their children with bombs?
Okay, my experience with that was Andre, we had a lot of, they call them boy signs, little boys in the world from 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, early teens that was on post. A lot of people worked on post, worked around with them. And we had several occasions that, I believe that was about an 8-year-old boy, and there was a 9-year-old, and I think about a 13-year-old, that actually, they wasn't strapped to them, but what they had been slipped on them, just playing on post. Because every night at 5 o'clock, all dead meat, all of them went, you took them out, like on this cattle truck, took them back to the building. We checked for them. But when they came in, you told them also check them. So they caught several of them with bones strapped to them, where they were gonna set an endeavor once they got in there and worked around, because they changed shoes, they wore clothes, and a lot of them were good friends, you know, that you learn really like. But they would also play fetter charges and all types of guns around. And they actually done it. They caught three right in the area Cameron Bank. And now there was one incident of the play coup. The name where they had actually some children was riding a bike and had the special charges on, rode down to the middle of town, a group of military people blew themselves up. So, it wasn't no limit to what they did. You also you also women would kill you at the, when you fought the women that you actually had to kill women too. And once the foreign the shooting started, you know, you couldn't trust none of them. You didn't know the difference between the BC and the Vietnamese. South and North Vietnamese were two different, but they're the same people, but BC was actually our enemy, and the Northern Vietnamese was actually supposed to be the friendly. But you didn't know one from the other. They could come in and you'd be working with these things, which was a lot, which is how they knew what to blow up on our supply depot, because of the enemy that worked in would get the location, where it was. Then when they left out at night, they reported. And then that way they knew when, where to shoot the rockets, how to aim, where to hit. They could hit basically what they wanted. They hit a lot of them. Ammo areas, they hit a lot of heavy equipment areas, battery areas, stuff that you're going to be able to use to fight against the main of what they try to hit. And also they hit areas where we store food, stuff like that. So they basically could hit what they wanted because we had no way of knowing who was the friend and who wasn't, except when they got caught. Some got caught stepping off. Imagine areas to be hit when that's caught, you know, we captured them and took them in. But it was a lot that did. More got away than we caught. We captured.
Is there anything else you want to say?
It was an experience. Now I don't look at it as so bad. Now that I understand God, there's a lot of things that will happen down here that we won't understand, but it's all for a reason. Now, my true belief is that the Vietnam War, my struggle with alcoholism, was my strength that has got me where I am today. I think it took all of that for me to be able come back to the point I am today. I don't look at it like I used to. I feel a lot different, but I'm a lot older. And when I came back from Vietnam, I don't know how I didn't realize I wasn't different, because partying before I went was the last thing on my mind. When I went, my intent was to do my time, come out, go to college, work in juvenile correction, That's before I went. That's what my intent when I first went in. When I got out, all I thought I was supposed to do was make up for that year and almost a half I done in Vietnam. I felt like I had no control of my life. When I was in Vietnam, I felt like my life was not my life. It was somebody else's life. And I had no control over that. And I felt like when I got back to the world, then I was going to do, I was going to party and make up for all the party and everything that I didn't do. And that was a whole different view of life when I, from when I went to when I got out. That's how different I was. But I didn't realize it until it was too late. I was a complete alcoholic when I realized how much I had changed and what I was really doing to myself. So that about summed it up. So, okay.
Clark and Nikki Atkins. And the number three song of High Five and Nine is
I told you, parade, I'm afraid of what I made, I played up. time to get smacked. My little homie Snoop Doggy Doggy's got my back. Never let me slip until I slip when I'm slipping. But if I got my name, then you know I'm straight tripping. And I'ma continue to put the rap down, put the Mac down. And if you woman wanna trip, I have to put the smack down. Yeah, then get off stop. I told you I'm just like a clock when I take games outside. But I'm never on party zone, get the break of dawn. See you with me, see you win in the city. They call Long Beach, put the straight together. Like my homie D.O.C., no one can do it better like this.
Want this free inventor's kit. It shows you how your invention may be packaged and submitted to industry through a data bank and by various other means. It's a free call, so dial 1-800 then 727 IDEA. That's 727 IDEA.
With the patio, hey, you love them on HBO's Death Comedy Jam. Now see them live.
The most funny comedy all-stars
direct from New York and LA. Regency Hotel Ballroom, featuring from the Death Comedy Jam and the voice of Robin Harris on Vacation, comedian Faiza. You've seen her on the Death Comedy Jam, the TV shows Hanging with Mr. Cooper and A Different World. Angela Mee.
Brother came up to me, asked me, would I be free for dinner after the show? Nah, I'm not gonna be free. I'd be reasonable.
And just at it, from the TV show 227 and the Death Comedy Jam, Renaud Ray.
It's good to look out and see some couples.
Older than me.
He's going windsurfing today. Look what you're doing.
What's wrong with horticulture?
Nothing. If you're 60, you're 16.
I know how old I am.
Do you?
Look, I'll make a deal with you guys. Give me another chance.
You promised never to sing Shine on Harvest Moon again.
Okay.
One more thing. We happen to know you're considering purchasing shoe trees. The win-wins. You so much as glance at the accessories counter will come down on you like a ton of bricks.
Okay.
All right. We'll cut you some slack. Just remember.
What?
Be young. Have fun. Drink Pepsi. Pepsi's gotta have it. That's a 10-4.
Thank you. Baby, wanna always stay together. So I'm 102 Jams, good morning. It's 8 past 7 o'clock, 7:08. Steve Logan in. And a little bit later on, we're going to do a ticket see Naughty by Nature in Louisville. So stand by because those tickets will be given away.
so fat.